Chapter 4. The 12th hole of the Kasumigaseki Golf Club stretched 290 yards down a tight fairway before it dog-legged left to an elevated green tightly guarded by a deep bunker in front. The U.S. ambassador to Japan, Edward Hamilton, waggled the head of his oversized driver several times before swinging hard into the golf ball, sending it soaring some 275 yards off the tee box and straight down the fairway. "Fine shot, Ed," offered David Monaco, the British ambassador to Japan and Hamilton's weekly golf partner for nearly 3 years. The lanky Brit teed up his ball, then punched a long, arcing shot that rolled 20 yards past Hamilton's ball before bounding into a patch of tall grass on the left fringe of the fairway. "Nice power, Dave, but I think you found the rough," Hamilton said as he spotted his playing partner's ball. The two men proceeded to walk down the fairway while a pair of female caddies, in the unique tradition of Japan's oldest country clubs, manhandled their golf bags a respectable distance behind them. Lurking nearby, four not-so-inconspicuous government bodyguards maintained a rough perimeter around the duo as they made their way around the course. The weekly outing at the golf course located south of Tokyo was an informal way of sharing information about the goings-on in and around their host country. The two allied ambassadors actually found it one of their most productive uses of time.
"I hear you are making good progress on establishing that economic partnership agreement with Tokyo," Monaco remarked as they hiked up the fairway.
"It just makes sense for everyone involved to ease trade restrictions.
Our own steel tariffs may still get in the way of an agreement. The trade attitudes here are certainly changing, however. I think South Korea will even forge a partnership agreement with the Japanese shortly."
"Speaking of Korea, I understand that some chaps in Seoul are going to issue another appeal for the removal of U.S. armed forces in the Korean National Assembly next week," Monaco said in a soft but accented voice.
"Yes, we've heard that as well.
The South Koreans' Democratic Labor Party is using the issue as a divisive wedge to gain more political power. Fortunately, they still only represent a small minority within the National Assembly.
It's a damn mystery how they can think that way, given the past aggressiveness of the North."
"True, but it does play on a sensitive cultural issue. The DLP tries to compare us to the historical foreign occupations of Korea by the Chinese and the Japanese, and it strikes a chord with the average man on the street."
"Yes, but I would be surprised if the leaders of the party are operating on a simply altruistic motive," Monaco said as the two approached Hamilton's ball.
"My counterpart in Seoul tells me we have no definitive proof, but we are pretty sure that at least some party officials are receiving support from the North," Hamilton replied. Taking a 3-iron from his caddy, Hamilton lined up the pin, then knocked another straight shot that cut the corner of the dogleg and landed on the far side of the green, avoiding the large bunker.
"I understand that support for the measure extends well beyond the DLP, I'm afraid," Monaco continued. "The economic gains from reunification are catching a lot of blokes' attention. I heard the president of South Korea's Hyco Tractor Industries remark at a trade seminar in Osaka how he could reduce labor costs and compete internationally if he had access to the North's labor force."
Monaco strode through the rough grass for a minute before locating his ball, then lofted a 5-iron shot that bounced up onto the green, rolling shy of the pin by 30 feet.
"That's assuming a reunification would maintain free markets," Hamilton replied.
"It's still clear that the North would have the most to gain from a reunification of both countries, and even more so if American forces are not in play."
"I'll see if my people can find any connections," Monaco offered as they approached the green. "But for now, I'm just glad we're working this side of the Sea of Japan."
Hamilton nodded in appreciation as he attempted a chip shot to the hole. His club scuffed the ground before striking the ball, which caused it to plop short of the pin by 15 feet. He waited as Monaco putted out in 2 strokes for par, then bent over the ball with a putter for his own attempt at par. But as he swung through the ball, a sudden thump emanated from his head, followed by a loud crack in the distance. Hamilton's eyes rolled back and a shower of blood and tissue sprayed out from his left temple and onto the pants and shoes of Monaco. As the British diplomat looked on in horror, Hamilton fell to his knees in a pool of blood, his hands still tightly clutching the putter. He tried to speak, but only a gurgle rolled from his lips before he toppled stiffly onto the manicured grass surface. A fraction of a second later, the dead man's blood-stained golf ball found the rim of the hole and dropped into the cup with a clink. 600 yards away, a short, stout Asian man dressed in blue stood up in the bunker of the 18th hole. The sun glared off his bald head and brightened a lifeless pair of coal-black eyes that were made more menacing by a long, thin Fu Manchu mustache. His squat, powerful build was more aptly suited to wrestling than golf, but his fluid movements revealed a flexibility to his strength. With the bored demeanor of a child putting away his toys, the man carefully disassembled an M40 sniper rifle and placed the gun parts in a concealed compartment inside his golf bag. Pulling out a sand wedge, he forcefully lofted an overpowered shot out of the bunker in a spray of sand. He then calmly three-putted to finish his round, then strolled slowly to his car and stowed his clubs in the trunk. Exiting the parking lot, he patiently gave way as a flood of police cars and ambulances came streaking up to the clubhouse with sirens blaring. Then he eased his car into the adjacent road, where he quickly became lost in the local traffic.